This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
Okay, welcome back. Looking forward to this last afternoon of our program. A lot of exciting things yet to happen. And right now, we have a special presentation entitled Democracy is Born in Conversation, which is probably familiar to almost everyone in this room. And this is a video presentation on Walter Capps' 1996 congressional campaign featuring some very rare footage, very rare indeed. The presenter is Alessandro Durante, who is distinguished research professor, emeritus, professor of anthropology at UCLA. A linguistic anthropologist who studies the tension between conventionality and creativity in everyday encounters, political arenas, and music performances. He has carried out research in Samoa, the US, France, and Italy. He is a fellow of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences and a recipient of the John Simon Guggenheim Memorial Foundation Fellowship. He has published two articles about Walter Capps' 1995 to 96 congressional campaign. And when I first took my position here, I learned of the work he had done following Walter Capps during his campaign and the commitment he made to studying it. And what an unusual story that was to hear, and what a delight it is to know it's coming to fruition for us through this presentation. I personally am just so eager to see what you have to share with us, Professor Durante. So please, welcome.
Okay, hi everybody, and thank you, Greg. Thank you for inviting me. It's been an amazing day and a half. I met so many interesting and wonderful and creative people and learned so much about Walter that I didn't know, because I had, as you will see, a very special it's a relationship really, but it's also occasion. It was an occasion of his second campaign for office for the U.S. Congress. So that's what I'm going to talk about. One thing I need to say is that it's not really a video presentation in the sense that there is video, but it's little clips that I will show you. I think it's very important for video to be framed, and there's never enough framing, but I will do some framing because video can be interpreted in many different ways, and I hope to be able to show you something that those of you who knew Walter very, very well will recognize immediately. For others, there will be other aspects. I think that I will have a chance to show something that's very important in terms of the way Walter was and what he was doing and the way he was thinking. The first thing I need to say before I continue, so this will be like maybe the second thing I need to say, is that this was made possible because of the fact that Walter and Lois, first of all, made it possible. So they allowed me to be around during the campaign, 1995, 96, when I would drive up from Los Angeles and spend the day with them, often in the car or in the house at a rally, at a debate. And neither Walter nor Lois ever asked me to turn off the camera. It was something that was accepted. I was accepted as a friend, as a colleague, and made it possible to have this documentation that now is also, digital copies and the Capps family has, and to decide what to do with it. Okay, the next thing is that I need to mention a metaphor that Walter used for what I was doing. He had lots of metaphors, very powerful ones. So the one that he used in terms of what I was doing was that the camera was the moral eye. I think that's very important to remember that, especially for what I'm going to show. The other thing is that I am a linguistic anthropologist. What that means that I study human interaction, especially language, discourse, what language in all its different ways and form does. That's what I concentrated on. And from the beginning, I was interested in this adventure of an academic, an unusual academic. I knew that Walter was an unusual academic in all the ways that they've been talked about over the last day and a half, but still an academic, a scholar, teacher, who trying to do this other thing that's very different. So I was interested in what would happen, what kind of transformation, what kind of language would have to be invented or used or adopted or borrowed for somebody like Walter to become a political candidate, to become a politician. To tell you the end of the story, short end of the whole thing, just in case I don't get there, which is all can happen when you give a talk, he didn't really change that much. I mean, really, the magic of the thing, I think, for the enterprise was that he managed to stay pretty much himself, and also with his own ways of speaking and being funny or being deep or being creative and being interactive, all of that, which you see in or you had seen or heard about in the interactions with students, he brought it into the campaign in very interesting ways. And I will show you a couple of examples of that shortly. More generally, my point was going to be that what I decided to do is to expand on this metaphor that he used all the time: democracy is born in conversation. And about democracy, I want to say that I think of Walter, I can think of Walter in terms of the concept that Antonio Gramsci introduced of the democratic philosopher. He thought that anybody can be a philosopher, anybody who is able to reflect about life and values and things can be a philosopher, but there were also professional philosophers. But the democratic philosopher is the one who not only can describe and theorize about the world and the human beings, but also can change, wants to change the world. And that's the kind of philosopher, kind of thinker that I think Walter was, and that has been already demonstrated here. So I've taken the democracy is born in conversation quite literally, you will see. But first, let me say a couple of things about my project. So it turns out, actually, I just counted the minutes recently. So it turns out that I actually have 43 and a half hours of video recording of Walter Capps and Lois and many others. In the house, in the car, at rallies and debates. And I use this method as an anthropological method, ethnographic method, of being there, being around. And sometimes people use this metaphor of the fly on the wall. You will see, sometimes it can't be quite a fly on the wall, but the point was that actually people were incredibly easy and trustful. And so you'll see them, they're very natural, and they allow me to be with them. And so the thing that's added, of course, is the video camera. And for that, I need to say something else, which is video is very powerful. Video is not necessarily reality. It's not reality, but video has a particular kind of relationship with reality. And depending on the relationship and the history that you have with what is being shown, can be very powerful. So I just want to tell you that ahead of time, and something that video needs, you know, care. It needs to be thought through and needs to be introduced. And so that's why this is not a video presentation, because I could show you 30 minutes of all of this, but I don't want to do that. Okay, so let me move on. So the main themes of my talk are, one is about how I got introduced to Walter Capps, which was through Lisa Capps. Two is about how Walter interacted with supporters and also how the beginning of the stump speech. And then there's another part that it hasn't come up very much, but I think it's very important who Walter was, and which is I call second thoughts. Yeah, second thoughts. He thought a lot, he rethought a lot, and he had doubts. And doubting was very important. It was a very important part of who he was, both professional, I would say, and also personal, the kind of person he was. And part of that was this question, number four: which one is a better life? Is a better life what he had been doing for 32 years at the University of California, Santa Barbara, which he loved? Or was it better life to try this other thing? to go into politics. And another important part was theme is stories. People have mentioned what an incredible storyteller he was, and I'll talk about that. And then finally, the role of the family, tremendous importance, involvement of the family, starting, of course, with Lois, but also, of course, also with Todd, was around a lot, and then with Lisa in a different way, and then with Laura also at the White House in a different way. So the way I was introduced to Walter was through Lisa Capps, who was a graduate student in clinical psychology at UCLA in the early 1990s. And she did a thing that, if I can borrow a political metaphor, I would call she crossed the aisle, meaning she left a moment behind clinical psychology, she went into anthropology and applied linguistics, the North Campus, as we call it, at UCLA. And she took a course with my wife, Eleanor Oaks, on narrative, and then another class with Eleanor and me on ethnographic methods. From that came that Eleanor and Lisa started to work together on a book. There was the first book, which I mentioned was called Constructing Panic. It was about a woman affected by agoraphobia. So Lisa used to come over to our house to work with Eleanor, and we had sometime lunch together. And she would tell me stories about Walter's first campaign. It was the most fascinating story. I love those stories. And by the way, over time, then you will see the crucial moment was, for my story was, and obviously a very important moment, was when David Brostrom was born. And then on that occasion, the UCLA hospital, I met Walter for the first time also, Lois for the first time. And so here you see them, Lisa at the computer with Eleanor holding David, as they were working on Constructing Panic. So now, I don't have a recording of that time, but I have a recording of later, during the campaign, the 95 and 96, when I did an interview with Lisa. Eventually, we went to Venice Beach because there was also little David, and we needed to find something for David to do, and he played on the sand while I was interviewing Lisa. He ate a lot of sand, by the way, that day, but he survived fine. So I want to give you a sense a little bit, even if it was a year later, maybe two or three years later, but the way in which Lisa talked about Walter and about the campaign. Okay.
What I'm hoping is that his approach, which has always been kind of innovative, like starting the class and kind of going with his gut instinct, yeah, that this can turn out to be more of that for him, that instead of feeling like it's, you know, being put upon him, that he can kind of look at it as a huge classroom. But part of the problem, I mean, part of the challenge, I think, is to free him up. I mean, free up enough space or flexibility.
Do you think he's thought about this for a long time, that he wanted to do this, or just came up suddenly?
No, I think he's thought about it for a long, long time. Or at least not about Congress specifically, mm-hmm, but about doing something political and something not academic, purely academic.
Yeah.
And kind of his whole mode has been, in teaching, is just to sort of like take the highfalutin edge out of academic work and mm-hmm the process. And I think he also has, you know, you don't teach classes with 900 students in them unless you want to. So he gets something out of,
right,
you know, talking to big, huge groups. And but the thing that's neat is that I don't, you never could have designed it, and he never really tried to design it. And he didn't, when he started working with the veterans, he didn't consciously think, okay, here's a huge constituent for me. You know, okay, it wasn't like that, yeah, as much as it kind of naturally evolved. And I think that feeling makes people really want to participate, you know?
So when I met Walter the second time, it was for after David's baptism in Santa Monica. I told him, his loss in 1994 election was a good loss. I said that most of what I knew about politics, I learned it from Samoan chiefs, and I knew that there are times when you lose, but by losing, you build something for the future. I thought that was his loss, was that kind. He was puzzled by it. He said, so you think I should run again? Sure, I answered. And then I added, and we could even follow the whole process, documented with video. He liked the idea right away. I could see the scholar in him being attracted by the possibility of reflecting upon an otherwise quite unusual enterprise for an academic. So here's first day of recording. I was November 13, 1995, the night before going through the district. At the time, it was the 22nd district. First place was going to be Paso Robles, and the people in his team are at this point here in this room, actually watching Bill Clinton on television at that point, particular point, the shutting down of the government in 1995. Here, there's Brian Winnick is there, and Lindsay Capps, and Doug will come a few minutes later, and Walter is looking at something that Lindsay and Doug have been working on, and he is focusing on this point that they made, that they think they're interpreting what he had said at some other point, which is to promise to restore faith in politics. And he doesn't like it. So he goes back and forth about this, and they over dinner time, they go back to this with this phrase, and he really doesn't like it. He says, I can't promise, and explain why that's not a thing that he should do or he could do. And eventually ends up focusing on campaign finance reform, which would be part of his stump speech the next day. So the next day, that's the first day of the campaign, November 14, 1995, and we're in the car, and there is Walter driving, and Lois, and Doug, and me, and also we'll see that Brian and two Palmer will also be coming, and Lindsay. And the first stop actually is in some big mission where they find the mission is actually closed, but they stop to pray there as the beginning of the day. And then they go to Paso Robles.
How are you?
Thanks for coming out. Thank you very much for coming out. Give us a good start for the beginning of the day and the beginning of this season.
So thanks an awful lot for coming out here today. We actually started up at the San Miguel Mission this morning, and we slept across the street, got up early, went up there. And we're going to spend the whole day now. And this is the first official announcement. There are going to be two announcements. The first announcement is that we are running for Congress from the 22nd District, and it's definite. We've got people all over the place who are getting signatures, and so today is the day. This is the day of the official announcement. But the second announcement is just as important. And that is, we will win this time. We will win this time. How do I know that? How do I know we're going to win? Well, you know, I can see it in your faces. I mean,
okay, and there is actually, I watched this maybe, I'm not exaggerating, 35 times. And there's a lot of magic there that happens. There is this idea that he comes up with having two announcements. They're not really two announcements. The first one is an announcement that he's running, but the second one about winning is not really literally an announcement, but he makes it into an announcement. And the point is to get feedback, to get the audience, this small crowd that he has there involved. But in the first one, and I did a little analysis, show you what I do. It's just only this is the only time I'm going to show you. If we think about this as a call and response, this will look at what Walter is doing. He's actually repeating the same thing in different phrasing each time. We're running for Congress on this 22nd district. Nothing happens. And it's definite. Nothing happens. He's trying again. We've got people all over the place who are getting signature. Nothing. No response. And so today is the day. This is the day the official announcement. Nothing. They don't respond. Okay, but the second thing happens. The second announcement, this time, when he goes. The second announcement is just as important, and it is that we will win it this time. We will win. And there's a little lady there who starts getting very excited. She starts clapping and smiles like that. And that breaks the ice, and the rest of the little crowd goes with him, and everybody's clapping. And now he got them, right? And now, so once he got them, then he can invent a third thing that happens, which is this, and how do I know? How do I know that? How do I know we're going to win? And people laughing. They think it's still funny, like the other thing was funny. And then once he gets it in, he gets everybody involved. He says, well, you know, I can see it in your faces. And again, there's a laughter. And then from this, we're not going to see it. But he builds the whole history of his relationship to the people, relationship to the district. And this is what I call the Oregon Trail story, coming through from Yale with Lois 32 years before. And it's an emotional story which ends, it's full of affluence. I know this district. I know because you are the people with whom we have lived our lives, and that is the thing. And he has them, and they're with him, and they love him. And it's a great moment of the very first stump speech that he gives. Now here's just a little later, San Luis Obispo. It looks the same. Well, let's have a look at that. I just want to show you that.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my great pleasure to introduce a congressman we can be proud of, Walter Capps.
I came here actually to make two announcements. The first announcement is that we are running. I'm a candidate for Congress, for United States Congress in the 22nd district. It's definite. We're filing. Everything is in order. And then the second announcement, I think, is probably even more important. The second announcement is that we will win. We will win in November. How do we know we're going to win? I can tell you. The reason we're going to win is that that I have every confidence that I represent majority opinion, the majority of viewpoint of the people in the 22nd.
Okay, so very briefly, but notice here, this time it works, I should describe it. He has to do it five times. And finally, the fifth time, they get it. And they clap with him, you know, about that I'm definitely going to run. The first announcement. The second announcement is very, very interesting. So they do the same thing. So the crowd is with him. But look what happens. When he's trying to do the same trick, is the other one. How do I know that we're going to win? This time it doesn't work. He goes, how do we know? How do we know we will? How do we know we're going to win? The intonation is different. And there is a thing that happens that is far away. There are all these factors. Everybody is... Who's done this knows this difference. There's a distance. He feels this distance, and he can't quite do the same kind of humor they have, the same kind of feeling he had before. Another thing that happens, I don't know if you noticed, is that he pulled out his speech. Now he has the written speech in front of him, which he couldn't do, Pastor Roberts, because it was too small of a place. There was no podium. And all of these things matter. All these things matter in terms of being able to connect to the audience, being able to say certain things, being able to feel good about it, which was very important. Okay. This is about thinking, second thoughts. Okay, here we go first. Going to sign. This is December 28th, after a long staff, a meeting with a kind of a problem-solving team.
You walk with him.
What?
He's having second thoughts.
Oh, no.
Well,
no,
I'm
no.
not the one that should walk
second
with him.
Second thoughts.
You should. I think the real question is, who's going to sign, Walter or Lois?
She's way out ahead.
Yeah, I think let her go for it.
Maybe that's
hey, all of the campaigns, all the good advice is still there, totally available.
She'd be great too.
And Todd will help her.
She would be great.
All right. So this, I'm actually gonna skip this, but is that. He goes to sign and he just starts playing this funny game, where should I sign? Should I sign? Brian, should I sign? Two, should I sign? And at some point, I go, Walter, I go, you better sign because I'm running out of battery. And everybody laughs, and Walter signs. So in that case, the fly on the wall didn't really work as a metaphor. Okay, just in case. All right. So, and this now is about this question of not just the doubts, but also the question about which life is the best life. And I want to show you this from the debate in San Luis Obispo.
Well, I got into politics as a kind of extension of the teaching that I had been doing.
The courses that I teach, I've been accused of being ivory tower, which I think is insulting to the entire teaching profession, but I don't think I'm very ivory tower. Although in some ways I wish I were, because that's a great tradition as well, to be able to take a look at what's going on in society and make sense of it.
So, ivory tower, is it a bad thing? No, it's not a bad thing. There's some good things about ivory tower. So now I'm going to show you another one, and it's dark at night. I still turn on the camera. Walter knew that I was recording all the time, and I asked him, how is this time different from the first time? And then he says, this is, you know, we're doing, you know, we're better, and so forth. It goes on like that. And then at some point, then he starts talking about what he thinks about the process of running for office. And it's at the end of a very, very long day. Also, there was a debate. And so that has to be taken in that context. But there is something important that he says. And here, I want to say that what we see here is something in the second book that Lisa wrote with Eleanor. It's called Living Narrative. And they talk about the fact that telling stories, there's always this tension. That can be this tension between the cohesion, coherence, you know, the storyline. And then at the same time, authenticity. To other side, to bring out other side that might be left behind or not mentioned, and that can take you on tangents and have all kinds of reflections. That's different from the main story, the way the story is organized. And here we go now. It's going to be subtitled.
When you live at the University of California the way we have all these years, I'm always looking for accomplishment, for achievement, you know, for either having a class where people learn or writing something that's going to be published. This thing seems so, there's no, in Greek terms, telos. I'm not making any money doing it. In fact, I'm losing money. Going up there tonight is, the goal, I guess, is to get elected, but that's not my highest ambition in life. So I don't have a clear sense of purpose in it. It's more like an adventure, sort of like being open to possibilities, and that's kind of ephemeral at this age. So I don't know. But then there have been some other times that have been so glorious that you can't believe it. It would never happen either if we hadn't been doing this. But I've never quite had the thrill of what happens sometimes in teaching, where somebody really gets an insight, mm-hmm. and maybe for the first time, and you can just see it all over their faces. I don't think that happens in this field. I don't. And I think what you're trying to do is stay out of the mud and try not to be, I said contaminated tonight, but I meant more, what is the word, compromised. It's kind of like walking in a field of temptation. You know, walking in the world of sin and trying not sinning, sort of. I don't trust it. I know I don't trust it. But the other day, I don't think you know how you feel about it when you're going through it. I think it's like that.
I don't know. I don't think you know about it until when you're going through it. I asked later, much later, to Doug, while I was reviewing my notes, whether it was true that my impression that Walter did not like staff meetings. And he answered me, this is later in 99, he said, "No meeting with staff? Boy, you got that one right." And so we got a system of bringing staff issues to all through me, then created a system for scheduling another time when staff usually meets with a candidate, using Lois as the go-between and sometimes the decision maker. This allowed him to consult with his own sources too, which he really seemed to enjoy. That way he came to his own conclusions without being fed an approach. You see, again, there's authenticity here. And as you know, he sometimes wrote his own positions or letters to the editor. I remember one to the New York Times, when we got calls to determine if he actually came, the letter came from the candidate. The one in question was a response to an editorial that Walter Capps would not be as effective as Andrea Tristrand. The response ended with a quote from Madonna's song, "You'll See." Walter Capps would have never written this letter or quoted Madonna, said the reader. Fact is, Walter sent a letter from his fax at home to the newspaper editor. First time we saw it was when it showed up in print. Okay. But now here's the thing. Here's the strength. Okay. Finding the story. So this is going to this place here, the last time he taught the class Vietnam War.
So what's going to happen today in your class?
Today's the final day of the class on the Vietnam War. There'll be some veterans there who want to talk a little bit. There'll be a couple of students who are going to pay tribute to their dads who were who fought in the war, and I'm going to do a little bit of a summary of the class, but by now you don't have to do very much summary because they've all got the point. And there'll be a little music at the end. Always have to have music. That's fine. Yeah. So that's it. That car went by pretty fast.
Okay. So here's the first story. The first story, let's hear.
We had a speaker here one year, Jim Garrett from South Dakota, who is, he said Sioux Indian, but he'd rather be called Dakota. And he was in Vietnam, and he said they'd just been in a firefight, and I think I've told some of you the story already. They'd just been in a firefight, and they walked through a village, and he was grateful to be alive, that they had taken a number of hits, some casualties, some wounded, and some boys, some children came his way. And he was worried that the children were death dealers, and somebody might be carrying a grenade or a rifle, or somebody could blow away one of the children. And he watched this one boy in particular, and the boy proceeded to approach Jim Garrett. And when he got right up to Jim Garrett, he used the two fingers of his hand, pointed to his eyes and Jim's eyes back and forth and said, "Same, same, same, same." And had noticed that Jim's eyes being Lakota eyes were similar to his eyes being Vietnamese eyes. What Jim told us after telling us that story is that he realized, he said, these are his words, that what links us as human beings is more compelling than what divides us. What links us as human beings is more compelling and what divides us. The same, 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 same is symbolic of that truth.
Okay, so where do you get the stories and how do you make stories that are relevant to the conversation? And Walter was always looking for good stories to tell. And now I'm gonna show you another story, this much later. Now it's October 7, League of Women Voters, and in a political debate. Second story.
I want to very much thank the League for sponsoring this, and I want to thank all of you for being here. I think this is the way democracy grows. Democracy is born in conversation. If we could have more of these, we wouldn't have to do quite as much of it over television. I grew up in the state of Nebraska, and I was a boy during the Second World War. And my Uncle Carl came home after being wounded in Germany, and we had long talks about war and about life. And he said to me one time that what was so curious to him when he was fighting the Germans, that they both look alike and they prayed to the same God. Now, I went to the old mission yesterday morning and Andrea Tristrand was there and I was glad for that. We prayed to the same God, we prayed the Lord's Prayer, sang some of the same hymns, and listened to the same sermon. When I got home from church, I watched television, and an ad on television said, and I'm quoting, "When Polly Klass's killer got the death penalty, two people were disappointed, Richard Allen Davis, the murderer, and Walter Capps." Okay. Now I want Andrea Tristrand to know that I was not disappointed, but there's a bigger truth here. Andrea Tristrand knows this isn't true. She knows this isn't true. But this is what happens in politics. This is what happens. This demeans the human spirit. I am there to offer an alternative. My name is Walter Capps. I'm running for U.S. Congress.
Yeah. So in my field, sometimes we talk about as intertextuality, which means that you borrow from one text to go into another, from one occasion to another. So this is the poetics of talk, we could say. In the Vietnam War, Jim Garrett, Dakota Indian, has the same eyes as the Vietnamese boy, and still they are on opposite sides. And in the second story, Uncle Carl, World War II story, I call it, he was fighting the Germans who look alike and pray to the same God. Third story, Walter Capps, Democrat, and Andrea Cisterna was sitting two people down on the same table. Republican, pray to the same God, sang the same hymns, listened to the same sermon. And yet, they were defined as enemies in terms of the way that Walter described that ad against him. Okay, final part is the family, the huge role of the Capps family, tremendous, tremendous role of everybody, and incredible family, as everybody has talked about before, amazing support. And there was, family was everywhere, and Walter was with the family, and the family was what families are, full of love and concerns and conversations, and also amazing campaigners and ready to help. And the life at home was mixed with the life of the campaign. And so anything can happen. Well, somebody could be putting requests for donation into envelopes, as happens in this context, as you will see. And then Walter would be playing the piano, and here you are. To go for a little rally.
So
yes,
today's Tuesday, election day. So what's what are you thinking about?
I'm thinking that we're gonna win.
Why?
Why? I just think we are. I really do.
What are the signs?
The signs are everywhere we walk, people honk and wave. I've been shaking hands in front of Walmart. People that, I think the same people who were saying Cap sucks 2 years ago are now enthusiastic.
What was it like when you went and talked to people house by house?
It was hilarious. Well, we went to a tough district, so it was okay. I mean, most of the time you knock on the door and they say like, oh, hi, we know you, we're so happy, you know, we're supporting your dad. Other times people would just like open the door and say, I don't want any. And I'd say, he's my dad, and then they would cover their mouths. I'm doing a little interview.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
He's my dad. Okay, so we got all the way to November 5th, 1996. Here's the family, part of the family at least, but waiting for results all together in front of an anchor woman. And here we go. So I talked about the fact that really politics in a sense is ubiquitous. In the car, in the TV room, talking to supporters, different contexts. Here's the UCSB. He's gonna talk to the students. And he is introducing Bill Bradley in the bookstore in Santa Barbara. And he's at home talking about Jefferson. He had been reading Jefferson that morning, and he's being interviewed here after that terrible accident he and Lois had. And here's, right next to Sistrand, the incumbent, and having a debate. And here's students in school. And here's meeting Hillary Clinton. It was a great day with a huge crowd. And here's with Laura in the car. We come from the White House to be with Walter and Lois that day. And here's the president arriving. And here's Lisa with little David. Here is the president, Bill Clinton.
Total vote number, Walter Katz, 51,053, Andrea Seastrand, 39,005.
Okay. The last thing I'm going to say is there's a coda. There's a coda. Here's my coda. So many years later today, in addition to this amazing story of success of Walter being able to win in a district that had a Republican representative for 50 years, despite his own, you know, ways of doing the campaigning, maintaining and fighting to maintain the sense of authenticity, but with this amazing support from his family. So, but now, many, many years later, we know another success story, which I think is built on perhaps in different style, different kind of skills, but equally remarkable. That's the story of Lois' political success. Her long tenure as a U.S. representative. And I did not document Lois' campaign, and therefore I can't assess her performance or do the analysis that I've done over the years of Walter's speeches. But I can say that my documentation shows again and again that Lois was the best kept secret during Walter's campaign. She was recognized by Walter himself and those who worked with him as an ideal candidate who could have run as well. This proves that there are different possible success stories, different characters, different strengths, different appeal. But there's also something that was not different. There was a shared sense of duty, a call to work for the common good, a trust in the sacredness of the human spirit, and the need to protect it and let it shine. In this respect, the legacy of Walter as ability to merge the political engagement with a spiritual commitment to the human spirit is also the legacy of Lois' engagement and commitment. And as a last thing I'm going to show you, and this is true, I'm going to show you, after Walter won, the next morning they go to a Spanish station, Spanish-speaking station, and suddenly we see Lois. It's an early version of what the Lois said that many of you met. Learned later. Here it is.
La señora Lois Capps. Adelante, por favor.
Thank you, Kevin. It's an honor for me to be speaking for a minute or two to give tribute to all of you who are voting today, who have already voted perhaps or will vote, because I know that you are doing this for your families. And I want to mention that I have learned so much. I've been working for many years among you in Santa Barbara as a school nurse for many of the schools, Harding School, McKinley School, Adams School, Cleveland School, Franklin School, all of the schools in Santa Barbara and the Pace Center at Santa Barbara High School. And from you, from all of you, I learned your value for the family. I hold it very sacred in my heart, the way that children are honored and respected, and the way that the elderly are treated and revered and cared for. This is something I think we need to bring back to our whole society. It's a gift you can give all of us, and I'm honored that this is something that Walter and I believe in so fully. And today our grandson is here with us in the studio, and our family, his parents are with us, and it's the treasure of our day to have our family surrounding us today.
Thank you.
Awesome. Super good. Thank you, Professor Durante. That was amazing and sets us up so nice for our last session. What I would like is this. We're a little bit off schedule, but that's not a problem. A 10-minute break to get some coffee, use the bathroom, a treat, whatnot, but please be back in your seats at 3 o'clock, and we'll round out this wonderful event now that we have such great context in front of us, both in image and speech. Thank you, Professor Durante. Okay.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.